So tomorrow's our last full day, and I can feel a lot of you sort of the momentum building, so I would encourage you to use the day well. There will be a tendency for a lot of people to thoughts about leaving and stuff going out there to start creeping in, but just be mindful of it. Don't fight it off. The mind is just trying to take care of you and say, well, okay, have you thought about all that sort of thing? So don't be mean to it, but you also don't need to indulge it. So just pay attention to what's going on. Tomorrow night's Dhamma talk discussion has a lot of different possibilities. So what I wanted to check with all of you is there something that's been missing? Is there some topic or some question that you wished we had spent more time addressing? Let me just open it up for a minute and see if there's anything pops up for you.
I guess closing ceremony, we might talk a little bit about carrying practice over into daily life.
We could spend some time on that, tomorrow night, but we'll certainly spend some time on it, in the closing circle.
Maybe a little bit more of the dependent origination stuff.
Okay, we did cut that a little short. Oftentimes what I'll do is spend some time on the precepts, particularly the daily ones, and how precepts are tools for mindfulness, not commandments, and actually playing around with those. Another possibility is that's a chapter in Buddha's Map that I really like that I've never used as a Dhamma talk. It's called Thriving in Difficult Times. It's basically about tanha and unpacking that. Another possibility, I have these six questions. I was trying to come up with just a few short statements that define the breadth of Buddhist concerns. And it seemed to me that questions actually frame those better than statements. And so my six questions are, how do I suffer? Where do I find contentment? What am I? What matters? And then from there it goes in, because Buddhism is very practical, is what's next? And what helps to support that. So in some of the groups and stuff I've been doing, we've been taking those questions and in exploring those. And actually what I intend to do tonight is take that third question, what am I, pick up where we left off yesterday and do some work around that. But there are some fun and I hope hopefully helpful things. The first two questions, how do I suffer? Not why, but how. What's the process, and where do I find contentment? That's a good topic for exploration. We could do a little bit of this would be off the ranch. Do a little bit of channeling feedback to each other.
What do you mean by that?
So what it is I would set it up so that you would spend a little bit of time, and I mean just a couple of minutes, with each person, to twice. One time you'd be in the role of guru, Buddha, enlightened master, and the other person would be in the role of a student. And we do a little sort of quick exercises in terms of getting as much of yourself out of the way when you're in the Buddha role, and just open it up and just, you know, from the heart, share, you know, I'm in front of Eric, just what comes to me. So you get this sort of wash. And then only a couple of minutes, and then you move to the next person, you get a wash from them, and the next person, and the next person. So.
I'd be super interested in that.
I like the questions
one
also.
Okay. Okay. So, what did I miss?
It sounded as if you started to speak. No.
Wouldn't dare.
I want to be with him though, because he was enlightened last night. So I want his wash.
Okay, okay. Oh, you would get his wash. We would all get a wash from
yeah.
him. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, are you still enlightened?
I may have broken a precept.
That wasn't the question. Oh, I see. subtle humor here. It's like, got it past all of us. Actually, to break the precept about speech, it actually doesn't account if it's a joke and everybody knows. Yeah. There's an intention to mislead. So,
does it count if you don't use any words?
Does, yes. That counts a lot.
Can we do that tomorrow?
Which?
What we're talking about right now.
Tonight we're going to pick up where we're at. So what I'd like to do is at the end of the evening we'll just come back and see if you have any more thoughts about it, and then I'll decide from all that. Okay. Did you figure out when we're taking a picture?
Yeah. Actually, there's a beautiful spot right out the front door, and the entrance from this side is really scenic. So it shows part of the house, and it has all these statues and stuff. So I think if we just kind of put ourselves there, I guess the time would have to be sometime convenient when we're all not meditating. So it would be, could be at the lunch bell or at the breakfast bell.
Lunch bell would probably be better.
Lunch bell?
Yeah, lunch bell would be better.
And tea bell is too, it'd be too dark. But I think it's sort of situated in the shadow of the house, and it might be
okay.
Opportune. We don't want to be in the bright sun because it ends up
right.
creating hot spots.
And right. Right.
Retouching these things.
So we'll meet there before lunch.
How about I'll just ring the lunch bell, and then we'll meet there, and then come in and have the...
Okay, yeah. And hope the pigs haven't broken into the house while we were gone.
Let's hope not.
never mind.
This morning, driving, oh my God, I had an adrenaline rush. Yeah, I was driving down the road, and these three little piggies that I see most every morning.
Little pigs, you almost hit them.
The big bad wolf.
So I'm driving, and I see these, like, they're going to cross the road, and I yelled, "Stop!" I was half awake, but then I was all awake. Anyway,
they were up the road.
They were. Yeah, they must have heard my alarm and gotten there.
No more pork links for breakfast.
No. It's another story.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, we're going to do some some dyads today, but this evening. But to kind of, so I'm picking up where we left off yesterday, and I just want to read a couple things to you, just kind of help us shift back into that, and then I'll tell you how this is going to work. I'll tell you what my plan is for how it might work. We'll see what happens. A lone bird floats in the dusk light. There's a softness, a fullness, a sense of completeness, closure, a taste of grief perhaps at the waning of the day's life. To open to this moment is to be touched by the movement of life itself, even as it fades. Coming home is returning out of individuality in all its frenetic energy. The loss of self which comes with peace can be sad. The hand that held on so strongly for so long aches as it relaxes its grip. The merge may seem scary. We would avoid it if we could. But at some point it seems that that is all there is to do. So we gradually let go. Love begins to penetrate the aching. The boundlessness of the sea that has been waiting patiently for so long. The hurt softens and dissolves. How could I have stayed away from this for so long? Yes, this is home.
This is home?
Home. And come at the same topic with a slightly different mood. This is from Chuck Lorre, who is a writer, director, producer, composer, production manager. He's created a whole bunch of sitcoms, including Grace Under Fire, Dharma and Greg, Two and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory, Mom. I don't think I've seen any of them. I've seen a few snippets. But I gather that at the end of some of these shows, it's like as the sitcom fades, the camera moves back, and as it pans back, there's just a couple-minute commentary that comes over as the sitcom closes down. And this is one of them. Sometimes I have conversations with people who are not there. Not out loud conversations. No Thorazine yet. Thank you very much. But I definitely catch myself having spirited debates and heated arguments with folks who exist only in my head, which doesn't stop them from speaking forcefully and at times eloquently on their own behalf. On occasion, they are people I know. Other times, they are purely fictitious creations brought into existence to question my thinking, my action, or just piss me off. Because there are not enough real people pissing me off, I've got to mix them up. Anyway, the reason I thought this worth discussing is that I am fascinated by what I like to call the bifurcated self, consciousness that has split itself in two in order to create its own suffering. Because there's not enough real suffering going on, we have to make some more. But recently, I've become fascinated by the idea that there is no self at all. That the solution to bifurcation is not reuniting warring selves, it's dropping the entire concept of self. The memories, emotions, thoughts, and attitudes that combine to create the self are finally recognized as nothing more than ripples on the surface of a pond. And the truth of what we are collectively and individually, is the pond itself, that which silently embraces the endless dance of form, deep, clear, still, reflecting the infinite and eternal, while receiving with equanimity both the beauty and the ugliness that falls into it. Even the critical inner voice, which is talking to me right now, excuse me while I respond, shut up, I am too a pond. So, tonight, what I'd like us to do is to look into some of the particulars of what it is we consciously or unconsciously think of as ourselves, and then work with these a little bit. What this will look like is you will have a partner, and these aren't going to be dialogues, they're going to be just sharing and witnessing like we were doing the other night. And one of you will have a card, and the first question will be, what are you? And it's like the diagram on the sheet I passed out last night with the me with all the attributes, body, talents, feelings, memories, etc., etc. So the question is, what are you? And you'll be speaking about the various things that are important to you about what you are. And your partner will be writing down just a note about each one of them. It's not going to be writing down all you're saying, but just a flag for each. So when you are witnessing, that's what you'll be doing. And the one speaking that's allowed when you are functioned as the scribe are to ask clarifying questions. They're not leading questions or what about this if you have to think that, but if you just don't quite understand, you know, you can just ask something to make sure you have it clearly. Okay. And then when we do that, done that, I have I'm not sure we'll do one or two rounds of that. We'll see. Then, when we go on with the rounds from there, you'll have these sheets. In fact, I can pass these around now. And we will be doing the sharing and witnessing again. And when you are sharing, what you'll do is you'll get your card and you'll take one of those qualities that you think of as you. And there's a whole bunch of questions here. You don't have to answer all of these. They're basically just prompts. And you can look through those and see which ones resonate with you or would be interesting to talk about. So, for example, you would look at one of those qualities or attributes. Is it really true that it's part of who you are? How did you learn that? How does it affect you to believe that? Who would you be without it? What's an opposite quality or an attribute that feels genuinely part of who you are? What happens when you hold those opposites in the mind at the same time? So you will be sitting there in front of your partner and you will just, there'll be 2 or 3 minutes for this and you can scan down and just pick one of those that strikes you and talk a little about it with your partner. And then when you run out, you can pick up another one and we'll just go back and forth a couple times. So if you can see what I'm doing, I'm not trying to lay out a map of specific things I want you to get to. I just want you to take that in and just have some way of just playing with it. The second list has ones, a list of qualities and attributes that are not part of who you are. I was doing this with one of my groups at home. Erica was a part of it. And what she had found, and for other people, was that sometimes it's not just what I think is part of me, but what things that I think are definitely not part of me. So if you end up with any things that are not part of you, this is a parallel set of questions, but they're slightly different to accommodate that. Okay, does that seems clear what I'm asking?
So what are we supposed to write on the card? Just our impressions of what we're hearing?
Mm-hmm. So what you will write on the card is you will be in front of your partner, and the first round we're not going to have these questions.
Oh, okay.
So the first round, it's actually the first round is actually the first question: who are you? And so you'll be talking about, you know, so I'm a guy, I'm a male. Kindness is very important to me. I like teaching Dharma. I like cats. I've got this body that warranty pins are starting to wear out. And so it would be...
So is it water, who am I?
What?
What am I?
Yeah, it does say who. I'm still in the process of sorting out how I'm going to...
It says what?
Yours?
Well, it says what are you at the top, and then the first bullet says who are you.
Oh.
So it's a work in progress. And then the one that I hope you'll work with somewhat are opposites. So those can be really important. So for example, if I say, you know, kindness is very important to me, what is an opposite of kindness that I also think is very important? So, for example, fierceness. Okay. So there are some way opposing qualities, but they're ones that are very important. Or openness is very important to me. And what's an opposite? Focus. Okay.
Boundaries.
Boundaries, yeah.
So are you going to kind of follow us through all this as we go through?
Yeah, I will go through as we get to each phase, and I'll, you know, say a little bit about what it is and make sure you're clear. I was just trying to give you the overall sense, so it can help settle in a little bit. Okay? You're there? So what I'd like you all to do first, this will sound like a 60s encounter group, but I want you to get up and just walk around, sort of mill around a little bit, and pay attention to people, and just see what happens inside you when you see various people. Maybe we'll just do this all night.
I like the way you
know. Okay, now find a partner and kind of spread out across the room and find a place to sit down together.
We need a card.
Yeah. You got one for your partner, too. Yep. Here are a couple cards. You want a pen or pencil? Yeah.
One for each one?
Yeah. Well, you could probably share them, but... So find a way to sit comfortably. If you'd rather have a chair, it's okay to move those around. You want to sit on the floor? Okay. There's a couple cards. Yeah. A couple cards. The first task and the hardest one is to figure out who's going to speak first and who's going to be a witness scribe first. Okay. So who's going to speak first? Okay. Okay, we're there. So close your eyes for just a moment. And if you're speaking, just you know, let your awareness move into your selfness. And if you are going to be witnessing, oh, let me just say one thing about the witness. I'm going to encourage you as the witness not to be a helpful, active listener, but to just be a presence. When I was in college, there was a friend of mine who was doing some research around operant conditioning, you know, training rats to go through mazes using rewards and stuff like that. And he undertook this experiment with his roommate, which was that every time he moved his hand towards his ear, he would smile. Just a little bit, so it wasn't obvious. And within about 2 or 3 days, his roommate had developed this habit of pulling on his ear. So we are very, very social creatures. We are very sensitive to social cues. So if you are, you know, smiling and nodding, et cetera, that will end up, maybe inadvertently, but guiding your partner. Okay. But if you are just there, in an open-hearted, full presence, they will get your presence. And when I was doing this sometimes, what I ended up doing when I'm sharing is I start making jokes, anything to get a response from my partner, because usually, you know, blankness is an indication of disapproval. But hopefully you won't act up as much as I did. But you actually get it after a minute. It's not disapproval. It's just they're just following the instructions. And if you can't get any response back from them, then there's nothing left for you to do but go and sigh inside and see what's true for you. And that can actually be quite freeing and quite encouraging. So the upshot of all this is that when you are scribing, you're basically meditating on your partner. Okay? Only for this, and it's the first time you'll be writing things down, and you can ask clarifying questions. And what we're after on the card is not long descriptions, but just a word or two that captures each attribute, so that when they come to the next part, you know, they can just flag it and see what it is, and they'll know. Okay, is that clear? Okay, so close your eyes. And the sharer get into their selfness. And the witness just really coming into that place of stillness where you're just a presence for your partner, just a heartful presence. And then when you open your eyes, the sharer will be responding to this question, what am I? What am I? What are some of my attributes? So finish up what you're saying and then close your eyes and come into silence. And then switch roles. So the sharer will become the witness and the witness will become the sharer. And of course the witness is also a scribe. And just settle into your selfness if you're about to speak. And if you're the witness, settle into emptiness where you're just a presence. And when you're ready, open your eyes and begin.
I'm a
If you have trouble with a pen, just let me know. There's some of them have the lead in some of the pencils is very hard. Finish up what you're saying and come into silence. And then we're going to switch roles. We're going to do just one more round of you writing down attributes. So when you're coming into being the speaker, the sharer, just kind of drop into your selfness. And if you're the witness, open out to that emptiness.
So we're going to repeat this.
We're going to repeat this one more time.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So we're not going to the questions yet.
Oh, okay. The attributes.
Attributes. Yeah. So you'll do the same thing that you've already done once. So the question responded to is, what am I? My sense of it is that going through it once sometimes doesn't get as much out as is useful, so we'll do it one more time before we switch to the next part.
Okay.
Okay. So the witness and scribe will be scribing. So begin again, and if you're sharing, you're responding to this query, what are you? What are you? So finish what you're saying, then drop into silence and switch roles. Then when you're ready, open your eyes, and the new sharer responds to this question, what are you? Okay, so you each have gone twice, right? Yeah. So now we're going to move to the next phase. And what I'm particularly interested in, there's lots of questions. The ones that I'm particularly interested in are... does everybody have at least one set of those? Okay. So what you're going to be doing when you're sharing is you will have the card in front of you that your partner created of attributes.
So you're a swap.
Yes. And you are not confined to what's on the card. I mean, there may be another attribute that comes up that didn't occur to you. That's okay. I just wanted you to have some prompts to work with. And then just pick up one of those and then scan down some of these questions and see which ones grabs you. For example, is it really true that this is part of who you are? How did you learn that, or where did you come to believe that? How does it affect you to believe that? Who would you be without that quality, that attribute? What's an opposite of that quality or an attribute that may be part of you as well? What happens when you hold those opposites in your mind heart at the same time? Okay. So it's okay to have a little fun with this. Just play with it and drop into it. Okay, is everybody clear on what the instructions are?
So can we select a few of our attributes to... Or you just want us to...
No, I'm going to give you some time, and you can work with it as you like, what feels comfortable to you. So it's possible you may center on one attribute and spend the whole time just on that one, or it may be that you'll go through one and go through another, and you may go through the list of questions in order, or you may there just may be a couple of those questions that you're interested in.
So is the witness still just witnessing?
The witness, not interacting. The witness is still just witnessing and not interacting.
So the questioner asks the question.
No, the witness just witnesses. You, when you're sharing, will have the questions in front of you, and you can decide which ones you want to respond to.
Oh, I see. So we're not asking. The witness isn't asking the questions.
The witness is not asking the questions.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We're just doing this on our own.
Yeah.
Witnessing.
Okay, are we all clear on that?
No.
So you're going to be...
What do we do with this sheet, the notes that we receive from our partner?
When it's your turn to share, you'll have your notes in front of you and have these questions. And and you may start by picking out one of those qualities, one of those attributes.
Okay.
And then and just scan through some of those questions and see which one... strikes you in some way. Either you like it or you don't like it, or it appeals to you, or something lights up, and respond. How did you learn that was part of you? Where did that come from? Who would you be without that? So you can... in other words, I didn't want to run everybody through those military style. Wanted you to have them all in front of you, and then just play with it. Is that clear?
I think so. It seems nebulous, but that's okay.
Okay. So,
would you like to model?
Pardon?
Would you like to model?
Sure. So, okay. So, kindness is very important to me. So, I can look at... So, is it really true? Yes, I think it is. It's not that I'm always kind, but that I really deeply value that. How did I learn that? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I learned that. It just seems to go way back for me. But I also, have learned over the years that I can be mean to people sometimes, but I don't like the residue that leaves in me, and it's sort of like when I try to be mean or something, I just. I don't like how it feels inside, but when I am kind, it's like I feel more composed. What's an opposite of that quality or attribute that feels genuinely part of who I am? I have this thing where if I see there's some tension in somebody, sometimes I like to just poke it, in hopes that it'll just kind of sort of bring it out so they can release it. You know, it's And so I get in trouble for that a lot because I don't poke well. But I love doing that, and that, you know, can sometimes feel fierce or something if I don't do it well. That got the sense of it. So the person who's going to be sharing, you get to pick out the attribute, and then you can look at what qualities. And you can stay with the same. We're going to do 3-minute rounds, and you can stay with an attribute the whole round. Or if you'd prefer to spend a little time in one and move on to another, use it in whatever way feels intuitively would be most useful for you. Okay? So begin. So finish up and then come into silence. And switch roles. And the new sharer can look through their list of attributes and qualities and maybe find one to start with, or if there's one on the list that comes up for you, that's okay too. And then when I ring the bell, you can scan through some of those questions and just respond to the question. Sort of finish up and then come into silence. We're going to shift roles. Sharer becomes the witness becomes the sharer. And when you're sharing, you can look through the list of qualities, attributes, things, parts of you, and pick another one or two. And then begin. So finish up and drop into silence. So you've both had 2 rounds on this, right?
Right.
Okay. So in this final round, all rules are off. I just want to give you some time to be with your partner and just share anything you would like before we, and then we'll move from that back in the larger group. So feel free to just talk, converse, interrupt each other, share whatever you like.
Is
about this experience.
Is there an agenda?
Nope. Well, the agenda is actually talking about what this experience was like for you. If there's something that doesn't feel like it was clarified enough, if you want to talk about that a little bit, we'd just do it without the structure of the sharing and witnessing. If you want to ask your partner something, that's okay too. So, bow to your partner. And let's come back into the larger circle.
This guy's a real writer.
Has he ever thought about a computer?
Most of them are running out of ink, too.
So, that's right. So what happened for you? What was that like?
Aspects,
like well, say so you had a lot of access?
A lot of access to memories and emotions that were underlying certain things uh-huh. that I think are strengths or weaknesses.
Yeah.
Mm, that's good.
Yeah, great. Good.
I feel like I would need like several hours of this to really get to anything. Just because I'm so, I'm like, so used to just kind of like shutting down and like holding everything inside.
Right. Yeah.
That for like anything like really meaningful to come out, it's going to take time for me to get comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. I also find for myself, actually emotionally, I move very slowly. And it took me a while to make peace with that, you know. But the stuff just takes time. I think some people move very quickly, and some are slowly.
I think most women would say that about me. We're slow on the
app. Yeah. So what was it like to feel like you needed more time to get to this? Or?
Well, I need more time, but I, like, as it went along, like, kind of got more comfortable.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
To really get to the point where be, like, really comfortable and open.
Yeah. It'll take a while. Other people find that similar type of thing. Particularly with a new exercise, it does take a while to kind of settle in and sort of figure out what the lay of the land is.
Yeah, I think when you square off inside somebody's personal space, and in this country our personal space is greater than in Asia or something where they don't, but when you're front to front with somebody who you really don't know, mm-hmm. I think there's an energetic...
So talk about your own experience rather than everybody's.
Yeah, I get an energetic feeling in my stomach that seems to need processing for a little while, so harken to what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, for me to be comfortable, connected, and open, it takes time. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed that it just took, you know, like 5 minutes for me to feel comfortable and settled.
Yeah.
I think it noticed between the two rounds the quality of what I said in the first round and then the quality that I said in the second. My partner was saying that it went deeper,
yeah,
it became clearer,
right,
and it may be relating to what you're also saying, that comfortability that I'm now able to access more. There's less tension.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does take time, and it also helps to hear where your partner is coming from, even if they're just talking about their stuff. It's at least what I find for myself is there may be something my partner talks about them that actually resonates with me that I hadn't even seen before, and it just sort of helps to kind of settle into that.
I was surprised at how little I thought of myself. But in terms of the attributes, we're like 75% negative.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I've been through all these things, are all old friends.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah.
I haven't seen through the majority of them, but I'm really familiar with them. So it's kind of like I know them really well.
Yeah.
And how they work and things, but there's still a part of me, and it was interesting when we were talking about for me with fear, and I was talking about, I could feel my energy really perk up when I was talking about what life would be like without that.
Yeah.
Which really showed me that I was still kind of, still pushing it away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was still kind of, if only you weren't in my life, you know,
right,
free or something like that. So
yeah,
there's still not a totally not allowing that to really be there,
right?
You know, it's kind of like, you know, like having an annoying girlfriend or something. It's like, if only you weren't here, I'd be
right.
You know, be able to go out and do whatever.
Right.
You don't have to go clothes shopping or whatever, you know, like,
well,
these sort of things.
Yeah.
But for me, it showed me that I hadn't totally allowed that to exist within me. There's still a lot of aversion towards it, and the what if this guy wasn't here, then my life would be perfect.
Right.
Which is a fallacy, of course, but for me, it's just clear that still
there's that delusion that can be really strong.
Yeah.
No, that's really great. I mean, that's this side of enlightenment. You know, we all have stuff like this. That's great.
I had this experience where I was just saying a lot of stuff, and then I looked at the card of stuff Jordan wrote down, and one of them was something I didn't say, but something that I've been exploring over the last month, which is songwriter. So I just wrote my first song like a few weeks ago or a month ago or whatever, and it was just this feeling of like utter joy, of, like, whoa, like,
I've been seen.
Yeah, I've been seen, and it feels like the universe is like encouraging me along the way. But
yeah,
it's like really validating and awesome.
Yeah.
I love that
exercise. And Jordan just picked that up intuitively.
He goes into people's brains all the time.
this is a thing.
I've got all of you.
Yeah.
Sorry, we saw that out for a moment.
Yeah.
You thought he was just a cook.
There's some secret ingredients.
He's really from NASA, you know.
So, you know, part of the reason for kind of shifting modalities is because, I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, we are so relationally wired. And this meditation that we've been doing here tends to be such a solo activity, but it sort of lightens lights up a different part of ourselves to, you know, to bring us out and actually see that. It also, since all of you have mature practices at this point, it's like you've got some tools to work with this. This is sort of like, I talk about those Tibetans, you know, in those long retreats, come down out of caves in the village to cause some ruckus so people get mad and say, have something to work with. This is, you know, gets you, kind of stirs all this stuff up. Because what we're really after in the long run is actually back in that pure, clear, open awareness that where all this different stuff can go, things that you like and dislike that are great and not great, and can actually see it all from some kind of distance and equanimity.
I was struck by how much lighter I am about the stuff I know about myself. And even the stuff that's negative is something. There's aspects that they're like life. I mean, it's familiar and it's. I don't feel as if I fall over it as much. That it's lighter. It was nice to sort of play with both the positives and negatives of a supposedly negative
right
thing. That a lot of the things that I am are useful in a variety of ways. And those that aren't useful anymore, I've got more of a sense of humor about them, except when they're pissing me off.
Some of the qualities and attributes I have that are very natural, I never thought, how did you learn those? I mean, I have no idea where I learned them, but
yeah.
They're something that is so natural for me. And what it did for me was I really feel much more confident. I have no idea where I got these skills, but they just are very natural skills.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, one of the reasons I like to ask where you learn that is because that's what it oftentimes feels like. It's been here forever. But if you have some sense of this arising at some point, it almost depersonalizes it a little bit. I mean, it's still very valuable to have, and it's great, but mm-hmm. You can kind of see it from that broader.
And it's usually always easy to do, and it isn't arduous. Like he knew that I was a songwriter.
So he just says that for everybody. He didn't see you at all. It's just a line.
It's okay.
It's so good.
So what are some of the opposites that you ended up with? And what was that like? They slip away easily, don't they?
I talk a little bit about being like arrogant sometimes, mm-hmm. But how I also... grew up feeling very inferior to everyone around me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of interesting how that, like, I still kind of carry some of that with me, but there's also this other thing that happens sometimes.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. As soon as we get monolithic about something, we know it's probably not the whole picture.
Scanning the list, I was surprised. Not necessarily. said surprised, but it was interesting to think about the basis of a lot of the things that I considered either strengths or weaknesses, and it was usually something that was challenging. Like the causation of, like, you know, because my childhood was like this, or my relationship with my father was like this, I developed this as like a coping mechanism for my identity to
build
around.
Right. And then the coping mechanism kind of outlives its usefulness, but it's wired in and it keeps going.
And then the strengths are still there if you can figure out how to use them without having the ego attached.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, I think, true in the places where we've been hurt, and there may have been this coping mechanism around, but the places we've been hurt, you know, as you kind of, you know, work that through and get some kindness around it, it actually remains there as a kind of sensitivity, you know, that it's maybe easier for you to pick that same thing up, you know, in other people, so it actually becomes a gift, you know, it's the other side of it.
So in that same vein, the survival mechanisms that I needed to learn because of my family situation, mm-hmm. it also became my success factors as I grew older and learned how to use those in different kinds of ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they were opposites, but they actually became complementary.
Right. Yeah. What I oftentimes, in terms of looking at opposites, you know, any of the factors or attributes inside you that you don't like, part of the deal is actually looking at what's the wisdom in that attribute. You know, what does it really give you that's positive? And then if you can see that and then find some other ways to get that, then it allows that attribute to retire gracefully. But it's sort of like if you have some quality that protected you for a long, long time and you say, okay, I don't need you anymore, you know, get out of here. It's like, you know, it's kind of invested in taking care of you. And so if you find some other way to reassure it, then it can subside.
That I understand, but what about anxiety? I don't see the upside of that one.
No, I'd agree. And Aaron said to me, oh, but wouldn't life be boring without it? Life's boring with it.
Well, without any anxiety, the next time you go to cross the street, you might get killed. You know, because there's a little bit. It's a warning. It's a signal. And of course, the difficulty is sometimes the signals become, you know, hyper enthusiastic, but it's actually born of that mechanism.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like without deadlines in business, nothing would ever get done.
Yeah. It's like some sort of forcing factor.
Yeah.
I know for me that the anxiety got me on the spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, really wanting to become someone who was more relaxed.
Well,
that was fuel to look at trying to live more skillfully.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely true. I think almost everybody comes to these kind of practices, I mean, serious ones, out of some kind of suffering. It may be blatant suffering, it may be just life is feeling a little flat and looking for something else, but that's the stuff. I was trying to remember how Ute Janiya said it. It was really funny, but it was so clear. You know, he was saying, you know, we all actually need pain and suffering, otherwise we wouldn't do anything. Hmm. You know, sort of, you know, kind of gets you up and gets you going.
Mm-hmm. Anxiety is really wired in as an anticipatory, it's like radar for us.
Yeah.
It's when it becomes dominating for us that it becomes destructive. And I think all of us learned that as children in different ways, given whatever our family relationship was.
Mm-hmm.
we either went blank around it or we over-anticipated. And the more anxiety is probably because we had to over-anticipate what was going on. And that's the fuel that we deal with, I think,
yeah.
Around our suffering.
Yeah. And so how do you work with anxiety in meditation? And I'm not asking what's the right way to do it. I'm asking what is it that you do with it when anxiety comes up? And what's worked for you and what's not worked so well?
Well, I look at it,
mm-hmm.
and I feel it,
mm-hmm.
the sensations are needed. I can go into colors and all that kind of thing as well. And then I can
into what?
Colors. Colors is what is the texture? Just really get a description of it, where it is in my body. And I can begin to ask questions about what's causing this? What's going on? What's upset you? What's frightening?
Mm-hmm.
So I just do a whole, and it may not, maybe it just comes through and it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I focus on it, the more it begins to dissolve.
And so how do you work with those questions?
How do I work with them?
Those questions?
Insight?
Yeah.
Just ask the question.
And then just let it float?
Just wait and see if there's an answer.
Yeah, good. No, because I think that part is really important. Because
I have a master's degree in this.
Well, the rest of us don't. That's why. Why I'm asking.
I'm Dr. Science. I have a master's.
Yeah. Other ways of being with anxiety.
Just sitting with it lately, and I'm realizing how that can be, it's almost like guesswork. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
it works, so like it'll just slowly dissolve. It feels like a really inefficient way to do it, so I think getting more direct, more skillful, I feel like I can be more skillful about it.
Yeah. Well, so ultimately it is about sitting with it, and there can be those questions. What's important in looking at it is that if you look at anxiety through anxiety, it probably won't go very far. But if you can look at anxiety, you know, through spaciousness or kindness or some wholesome qualities in the mind.
Pushing it well instead of pushing it away.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So did I talk about this here, if you have a wholesome and an unwholesome quality in the mind at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you've had a wholesome and an unwholesome quality in the mind at the same time. Over the long run, the wholesome wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to get rid of the unwholesome qualities. That's the most important part of this. All we have to do is cultivate wholesome ones. And just awareness, mindfulness, is just an incredibly wholesome quality.
Mm-hmm. Rick Hansen, the neuropsychologist, says those things that wire together... Fire together, wire together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They fire together, they get hooked in together.
They wire together.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. Yeah.
So what's the opposite of anxiety? That's part of your question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the opposite of anxiety? Are what are some opposites?
Contentment.
Confidence.
Trust.
I get an incredible relief when it starts to move on.
Yeah. So relief is... Yeah. Equanimity.
Yeah.
Equanimity.
You know, on retreat, it's there's enough spaciousness for that energy, that anxious energy to move. In day-to-day life, though, when I'm not cultivating as much meditation practice, then it's the anxious feelings are a lot grosser than on retreat, I feel like there's a lot more spaciousness and a lot more wholesome qualities.
Right.
And it moves through a lot fluid.
Right.
A lot more fluid, but when I'm churning out the day-to-day at work and, you know, you've got
right.
presentations and meetings and stuff, it's just getting up, you know, like there's less wholesome qualities and it's more dominant, and I find
yeah.
it a lot more challenging.
That's why I like to go on retreats.
But I find that the more I'm meditating, then when I get into situations like that, it's not so extreme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the more you meditate, particularly in the style, the 6 hours begin to kick in. Mm-hmm. The difficulty with anxiety and a lot of those is we tend to get hooked into the storylines. And the storylines are usually not capable of resolving it because they have actually, storylines have very little energy. Storylines have about that much energy. They have all the neon lights, you know, all the bright stuff, but the anxiety itself is this. So if you can just feel the anxiety energetically, bodily, etc., when it, and just a part of you, even at work, that even for just a moment, says, "Wow, I'm really anxious," you know. But just it's sort of like that thing we were doing the other day with the dropping. You know, if you can just for a moment just actually drop it to get clear, and then it may kick right back in because everybody's screaming for the reports or something like that. But even just to break the trance of it for a moment to get a little bit of space, it begins to set something going inside that'll help untangle it.
Working with executives in particular, begin to develop all kinds of tricks. So one trick is before you're sending emails all the day, before you send an email, you pause and you have a phrase or a word or something that you decided on to just take a moment to reflect, take a breath, notice your body, and then send the email. So that every you want to find triggers. You know, every time you're going to get ready to make a phone call, you pause. So you use devices that interrupt the anxiety generating where it starts to accumulate over the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all kinds of little tricks like that that interrupt. Like Pat gave me this thing called a pause on my wrist. So every hour, it just slightly buzzes to remind me, and I have a phrase that I just sit back for a moment, take a breath, and then I go on. So it's just trying to interrupt that unconscious generation that we do to ourselves.
When I had a staff, I would go into the office about half hour early, light up my computer, and I would just meditate for the next 20 or 25 minutes, and then the staff starts trickling in, and all of a sudden the day is just happening. But
and they think you were working on a computer all this 20 minutes.
Actually, I'd be in a jhana, honestly. So the idea there was that became my meditation space, kind of. It came out of need because I came back from a retreat and I just went, I am not going to live this way anymore. In this office with these crazy people. So I just went in there and just became mindful. And as it went on through the months, I kept doing that. And even my CFO came in one day and went, "You know, Jordan, it's really been nice working with you." And I've really enjoyed it. And it's like, it just, and instead of taking that from home and going to this place, I actually kind of transformed that chair into, you know, that space. And it really transformed that. And also I made sure I got that, you know, 20, 25,
yeah.
30 minutes of practice in the morning. And, you know, maybe by 5:30 it was worn out, but boy, it stayed a lot of the day. And every time I sat in that chair, it was like, Jonathan, you know, this is a rocket ship, you know, to the fifth genre or something. I mean, and it's a great idea.
Yeah.
So the companies that are bringing mindfulness in, one of the basic things besides teaching the person, every meeting they stop and everybody just for a minute or two just centers and gets mindful and then proceeds with the meeting to break again that activity thing that we all get caught in.
Yeah.
Now, they're going to create a virtual reality system that you put the goggles on, and all day long you walk around this wonderful glass. Breathing.
Did you read my email? No, no.
And so to take all that, because I think all those mechanisms are helpful, and the simplest one of them all, this is about, you know, taking it back out there, is just as often as you think of it, just pay attention to what the qualities in the mind heart are at that moment and what that does. And then you can have grosser mechanisms that help, you know, break in when you've just been off for a long time. But brings the mindfulness in more often, and you can't sustain it. So what's actually more important is just come back lightly and come back and do as much as you can, because if you try too hard to do it, you just burn out all your energy and wear out and the whole thing collapses. So you just keep on doing that lightly and then build in other mechanisms, etc., that help. Okay, so it's getting on towards 8 o'clock. Any final comments?
Do you want to sing your song?
Maybe after
the music. Yeah.
It's a good part.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you know, you asked at the very beginning about tomorrow night.
Right.
Kind of as we've talked about this, what is, you know, we're doing the meditation, but the goal, if you will, is this awakening.
Right.
So what are the characteristics, the process, the movement of working with that awakening in our daily lives? Seems to me that might be really useful as we go back on a retreat. I
think
that was just the thing.
Yeah. Other thoughts about tomorrow?
Just integration in daily life. The people who aren't going to be awakened within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. It's just with like psychological problems in general, which ones can't be solved through meditation or some sort of like internal awareness and alleviating certain held traumas? Like,
oh,
where do you find that there could be a line? It seems like anxiety and depression and stress and all these things.
I can give you an example of what happens where introspection doesn't work. Say you grew up in a family where anger just wasn't handled. You know, maybe people blown up all the time, or maybe it's completely suppressed, etc. And so you go grow up kind of afraid of anger. You know, it's just that you're just not at all comfortable with it. Well, when you go out in the world, you actually need access to anger. You know, somebody comes up and stands on your foot and say, "You're on my foot," you know, and they don't notice. Sometimes it takes some push. So if you don't feel you have access to anger, say anger is a force that, you know, creates space, can help move through energetic barriers, can help you know, connect. If you don't have that, then the world becomes a pretty scary place because there's all this stuff that can come at you. And so you sit down to meditate and this anxiety comes up about how scary the world is, or just even the future, you're not sure what it is. And you can meditate introspectively on that anxiety for 20 years without it moving. Because the problem is not the anxiety. The problem is the anger. Mm-hmm. The problem is the anger. So one of the things that I do with that one, when I see that, is I encourage people, and it doesn't take much, you know, to just once a day, maybe for 5 minutes, just sit down and have an internal dialogue with the anger. You know, why you always scared me? Well, I don't like you. I'm not doing anything. I don't like you. That's really mean. I'm doing, but you know, and so it kind of stirs that up a little bit, and you begin to feel the anger. Then when you go back in your meditation, it becomes more available, and it can begin to move. But just introspection alone sometimes, you know, won't get at it. So a lot of what's
The anger that you've internalized is so suppressed because you're uncomfortable with it.
Right.
Like, it's not that you can't be angry in day-to-day life. It's that your internal anger is just completely inaccessible because you're so uncomfortable with the idea of it. Okay.
Yeah, so if you're in a situation where it actually needs some... that wisdom would be... certain amount of forcefulness, if you sort of unconsciously realize that's actually not so much available to me, then there's a lot more, the world becomes a lot scarier.
But wouldn't you also say that I may not have awareness or access? Don't I need a therapist or someone that would help me begin to become aware and to see what the access points are?
Right, so that's another aspect of it. It's actually relational. Some of it's your own relational stuff, and some of it is just, you know, a fair, wise, heartful, clear witness that can, you know, reflect back. Mm-hmm. That's part, I think, in the Buddhist system why the Sangha was so important.
But so if you were talking about the integral system... And so they're saying there's a building process, and that it's there's a movement through the psychological as part of the developmental movement toward awakening. Isn't that true?
Yeah. I mean, the way I think of it is that in the West we have much more appreciation of the complexity and the intricacies of the delusions we live in. But we forget that it's a delusion, that the goal is actually to step out of it. In the East, you know, there's much, oftentimes a clearer sense that we're actually living in delusion, but sometimes not appreciation of how fierce, you know, the mechanisms can be.
But so back to Chris's question, then it becomes a psycho-spiritual dynamic of that opening.
Right. And what I would say is, like, when I look inside myself, I don't see psychological and spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just the stuff that's going on. Right. And from the outside, there are different models and different approaches that come at it. But the stuff here is just what it is.
Related question. There's, like, the somatic experiencing work where you have to, like, relive the actual physical trauma in some way?
I don't think you have to, but I think it's really helpful.
The question is, like, for me, today, for instance, I found some, like, really early childhood rage feelings, it felt like. And it, like, sort of, like, took over my face a little bit.
Yeah.
But there wasn't more than that to, like, you know, whatever I wanted to maybe do at the time, maybe, like, throw a tantrum or something. But, does meditation somehow just help equalize that energy without having to actually, like, fully relive it in a way? Or do you need to, like...
So I'm a trained bioenergetic therapist, so that works, like, directly with body energy. And a lot of it was because I just needed it myself. I was like so doled out, and so people that could work with the musculature and stuff had to free that up and bring it up. And so I ended up with this model that what you have to do is get the energy inside and get it and move with it and act it out, et cetera, et cetera. But as I went on over the years, I realized that that's not actually what it is. It's the awareness. And if I have this thought that I'm angry, and that can be very muted, but if I'm out there whacking someone with a tennis racket, you know, then I feel it energetically on its own terms. And so it's actually, it's the awareness of what's going on that really heals it. And in those expressive therapies, you know, for people like me and stuff that were really kind of shut down, can be really, really helpful to, because if you sit there and just talk quietly about it, it just doesn't get at the energy. But if you're sitting in meditation and you can feel that early anger and all that stuff and you're not fighting it, you're just kind of opening it up, in a sense, just relaxing into it, even if it takes you for a ride for a while. That allows it to come forth and to actually release.
Yeah, it's like what you were saying the other day about the working with everything on its own terms.
Like that's right.
Across the sort of spectrum of analytical to
right.
physical, emotional.
Yeah. But the, you know, the human capacity, I mean, the power of what we call our imagination, you know, the capacity to actually sort of be fully, you know, in something when we're not actually acting out is quite remarkable. And so if that gets shut down, then you need to act it out to activate that. But if you can really feel the energy on its own terms, and it doesn't necessarily even mean going back into the storyline. But if it's something that has very young origins, then when it comes up, you'll just know it has those origins. You don't have to analyze it or do anything. It just becomes really clear, and allow that to move and just be with it.
Related to that, so that totally makes sense to me what you're saying. Like, if you were able to experience those things just through awareness and just be with it,
mm-hmm.
you can work through it. That makes sense. I noticed for me with my static dance practice, it seems like certain things I become aware of that never come up during meditation for whatever reason.
Right.
Like, as I'm moving.
Right.
So for those kinds of things, like, would you say that it's just a matter, for a lot of those things, is it just a matter of time with meditation? Like, as I go deeper, those will naturally come up, or there's certain kinds of things stored in the body that just generally don't seem to come up for people at all?
I think with a fully developed meditation practice, all of it would come out. And I think that sometimes there are other techniques that actually move a little bit faster, you know. And so if you just want to get on with it, you know, find all kinds of different tools that are actually, you know, help move stuff along.
Got it. But as you go through to full awakening, everything generally will come out.
Right.
Totally free.
Right.
Okay,
right. And it's... I'm just hesitant because I'm just working with the model, everything coming out, it's actually the awareness goes into everything. You know, there are no more secrets even from yourself.
Well, remember, I mean, you're a yogi. So that is a meditation practice when you do your yoga. An ecstatic dance is like Prajapian movement or... Sufi movement,
mm-hmm.
those are all meditative spaces to openness. And
yeah,
different body types right. respond to different kinds of meditative structure.
I guess I was thinking of when I said meditation, I was thinking like sitting meditation, but you're
yeah.
totally right. It's
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, Rajneesh used to have an expressive dance every evening.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
did Dhiravamsa, another, you know, meditation teacher. And they would do your 6 o'clock sitting and until 8:30, and then they would dance for an hour,
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
reckless abandon.
Mm-hmm.
Stop the music
mm-hmm.
and sit again.
And
right.
in the book that I talked
yeah.
about, the brain, they say that the dance and the meditation opens up
the brain in places for enlightenment almost faster than just sitting. So all those things are really important.
It's an extra treat.
Pardon?
It's an extra treat. Dance.
But well, it's not only dance. I mean, music.
Music.
The arts as a whole are really
the music.
Mm-hmm. Acts. They access the same.
Part of this big picture that Puneji talks about, he says, meditation exercises are for normal people to become extraordinarily normal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not therapy. And, then he goes in and says, the Eightfold Path is a sequence, and meditation really starts on the fifth step with, you know, what we call harmonious practice or right effort, the Theravada's goal. Do you agree? And what are your thoughts about that?
Well, as I was talking about the first couple of nights, I don't think the Eightfold Path is for beginners. I think the beginning is turning towards, you know, understanding suffering, recognizing the tension, relaxing that, savoring Naroda, and then when it gets stuck, then you have, you know, that whole other sets of things that helps loosen it up. But to pick up on the theme that we've been talking about a lot, you know, the research on this stuff that people really want to move through their stuff is working with multiple modalities. You know, and there are different ones work for different people, but any one will have its limitations. And meditation, I think, again, done well, can take you all the way, all by itself, but it may not move as quickly as if you're, you know, working some other things at the same time. And the difficulty, and this is really a live issue for me in terms of what to do with retreats. I'm almost convinced I may bring my guitar in my next one, you know, and just actually bring some singing or some other things in. The difficulty comes in is that while working in different modalities can be very effective, some don't actually work well together. You know, the most obvious example is fasting can be an incredibly, you know, cleansing, and you know, when I haven't eaten for 3 or 4 days, it's like my body energy goes way down, but it's also my mental resistance. It just kind of, you know, and you just kind of see everything more clearly. Meditation, you know, is very, very effective. And fasting on a retreat, I think, is ineffective because the meditation takes a lot of energy, and if you don't have the body, so there is something about looking at the, you know, effects of how these practices work together. But I think, in terms of being out of what you do with your life and stuff, it's you just kind of experiment, you know, and see what works. And anybody who says that they've got to practice and this is it and it's the only one that'll save you, you know, you kind of smile and sort of move along. They may have something that's. I had a friend of mine that set up an introduction to EST at her house and talked me into coming, and so we sat down. Est is one of these high powered that has motivational speakers, and I think of Est as sort of breaking ego with ego, and so
Est doesn't exist now.
It became became Landmark. Yeah, it was a precursor to Landmark. Because Est got so extreme, and so they sort of rebranded it. But this, you know, this woman was talking about, you know, this practice would do something that not, you know, you're not going to find anything else like it. And so I was listening to all this and kind of taking it in and said, well, have you ever done therapy? She said, no. Have you ever taken psychedelics? You know, no. Have you ever done body work? Well, no. I went through about 4 or 5 of them. I said, well, you haven't done anything, but asked, how do you know that nothing else will work? So, and I think all of us, you know, have different you know, gifts and proclivities and you know, that work better for us. And so I am just a real believer in empirical trials, you know, try and think it out, see what works. Use your own intuitive, you know, sensing with it. And, you know, and I have enough spiritual greed that, you know, if it tends to work, I'll run with it for a while, you know. What the heck? Life is short, somebody told me once.
Do you know Reverend Ping Shu?
Pardon?
Reverend Ping Shu, from the 10,000 Buddhist Monastery in Los Angeles. It's a Western guy.
Yeah,
He did from 1,000 kilometers of bowing.
Every six steps.
His Dharma talks, he just plays a guitar. He does do some dialogue, some talking, but it's mostly transmission of the Dharma through music.
And so is he any good?
Yeah, he's amazing. Oh. Yeah. I'm not that musically inclined, but he's really a very good musician.
And his name and his monastery?
I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Hengsure. He's a Westerner, and he was from the 10,000 Great Buddhist Monastery. It's like a Chinese.
It's the one up near Clear Lake.
Clear Lake?
You remember?
Near Clear Lake?
Yes.
Yeah. It was in L.A.?
Yep, it was near Los Angeles.
No, it's in Northern California.
It's Mendocino.
Yeah, it's up near Mendocino.
Is that where we saw Shogun Rinpoche?
No. No, it's that big, beautiful temple sitting out in nowhere, remember?
Oh.
Yeah, have you been there?
Yeah. No, but I know of it.
Yeah, and we were there.
It's kind of a private space. You need an invitation to go.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he went from there to L.A., stopping every 6 feet and doing prostration.
No, really?
To L.A.
Just like they do in Tibet.
Yeah.
What they do in Tibet?
So Chris, coming back to your question, my rule of thumb is getting as clear as I can of what is it that's going on in my life right now. What am I feeling? What's experiencing? Talking with people to say, I actually know my natural next step. See, I don't think there's a formula, but there's my natural step that I'm taking, and the gift of this period of time we're in is that there's all these resources that are available, and we've got to connect to ourselves. What is this? You know, for Eric, it may be now, singing, and does he start taking lessons? What is it that's pulling inside you? That's where the next healing, that's where the next opening is going to come in your life. I've been a critic of all the programs because programs are saying, go through this program and you'll become this or a different person. Well, that program might be right for you as a next step, but it's not going to fulfill all that is your path. And so, you know, just what Doug is saying, experiment, but I'm saying experiment with that which is pulling you. What's pulling you is what's important.
Yeah, and there's I always think energetically there's a difference between what pushes you and what draws you.
Yeah.
And the push is usually comes more from fear, and you can get hooked on that, but actually feeling, you know, what the draw is. Okay. I think... So let's just take a moment and just be aware of a couple of your opposites. And just sit with them and open up to those opposites together. and allow there to be a lot of space around them. They're not to be resolved, they're not to be fixed, just to be known. May all beings know their expansiveness. May all beings trust more and more deeply what draws them. May all beings know the peace that is behind all that we experience. May all beings know the freedom that comes when we don't hold so tightly to our sense of self. May all beings be free of a self. May it be so.